Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Nick Augustine, and I am here with attorney Joseph Roble from Joseph Roble Limited, the Chicago bankruptcy law firm. This is the Chicago Bankruptcy Update, featuring information, news, and updates in bankruptcy law. Financial troubles are very stressful, and bankruptcy can be a solution for you. If you are considering filing a bankruptcy, Joseph Roble will courteously and professionally review your finances, answer all your questions, and provide information that you need to allow you to decide for yourself if bankruptcy makes sense, has value, and is the best way to provide relief from your financial woes. I'd like to remind everyone to use the on-demand links to all of our episodes in our Blog Talk Radio host channel, where you can find all of our episodes. You can also find more information about the Chicago bankruptcy law firm of Joseph Roble Limited by visiting chicagobankruptcy.com. Don't forget, we are also on Facebook and Twitter. Today's show is Bankruptcy Basics, February's Bankruptcy Frequently Asked Questions. This is part two of our two-part show this month. And as a little teaser, here are just a few of the things we're going to cover on our program. These are real questions from real folks want to know about bankruptcy. Here's a few examples. Someone wants to know if they're liable for their spouse's student loan debt. How can bankruptcy help them out if they get divorced? Another person wants to know, how does the reaffirmation of a car loan work in bankruptcy where they want to keep their car? Another example would be, why would I file for bankruptcy if my income is exempt from wage garnishments? Another one, can you get a Chapter 13 with no payments? I want to save my home. More details to come. Well, we are here with Joseph Roble, and he's been a practicing attorney since 1973, and his experience in a wide variety of legal matters relating to individuals and families helps him as he presently concentrates his practice in consumer bankruptcy. Mr. Roble has helped clients get out of debt and get a fresh financial start. He's an active member in several bar associations and is on the bankruptcy panel of the pro bono program of the Chicago Volunteer Legal Services. Mr. Roble earned a BA from psychology from Northwestern University, and in 1973, he earned a JD from DePaul University Law School. He also served in the U.S. Army 363rd Civil Affairs Unit. By way of short disclaimer, this is a general information program. Any advice shared on the show does not constitute legal advice, and communication or listening to an attorney in this program cannot give rise to an attorney-client relationship. If you have any questions, you should follow up with the bankruptcy law firm of Joseph Roble Limited and make an appointment to speak to an attorney by dialing area code 312-781-0996. Finally, all callers remain confidential and rights to this broadcast are reserved. Time to say hello to Joe Roble.
Hello there, Nick. How are things today? I hear you've got some snow.
We do, because I guess Mother Nature would feel like we'd be left out if everyone up in your area in Chicago and Boston got all the snow. In fact, Boston gets so much snow, it somehow appears in all of our weather forecasts in North Texas. They talk about our snow compared to Boston and don't cry about it, but it's still slick and no one knows how to drive, so it's always best to stay home. So as I'm
happy to share this with you.
I'm glad that I'm not getting to miss out. You know, being from the north, I remember how to drive around in slow and stuff, but it's quite a different thing. For some reason, the way it sticks to things here, it's just a little bit different. That or it's just slippery and I forgot. But on to some exciting bankruptcy topics today. Are you ready for these questions?
Ready to go.
All right. Without further ado, our first person is interested in knowing about liability for student loans. Apparently, the marriage is not going so well, but they got married in 2010. At the time, the husband was in his third year of medical school, which is rather expensive. Now he wants a divorce. Well, his lawyer sends me papers that says he wants me to pay half of his student loan debt. I didn't even know about this loan. I didn't have any information about it. I don't have any job. My father supports me, And he sends me money to live here from her country. She's not from this country. Her question is, am I liable for my husband's student loan? Please advise me.
So we have a situation here that is actually mixing two areas of law together, divorce and bankruptcy. So from a bankruptcy aspect, student loans, if one files a bankruptcy, student loans are not dischargeable. You can't get rid of them as you can credit cards and medical bills. And you can't become liable for a debt of your spouse just because you married your spouse. And that doesn't matter where you live, regardless of the state in the United States that you live in. You can only be responsible for a debt of your spouse if you signed for that debt with him on a credit card or on a loan. So her fears of getting stuck with this debt are not founded. But going to the other issue, the fact that her husband's lawyer wants her to pay half the student loans, now we're dealing with divorce issues. And with a divorce case, you have to try to settle the issues between the parties, or the divorce judge will decide it. And you're settling matters of custody if there's children, child support if there's children, maintenance if one party is supposed to support the other. And then if there are debts, who's going to pay those debts? And just because the debt is only in, let's say, the husband's name, doesn't mean that the wife won't have to pay part of it if that is what the parties agree upon or the divorce judge will determine. In this situation, I can't see her getting stuck for paying part of the student loan. He has the advantage, the husband. Apparently, he's now a doctor or on his way to being one. She doesn't work. There's most likely a difference in incomes, but she really needs to get herself a lawyer on this divorce case so that she doesn't get stuck for something like having to be ordered to pay a student loan as part of the finalization of the divorce.
All right. So, how often do does this happen when family law questions sort of pop up in bankruptcy?
Well, if there's if there's marital issues, parties are separated or thinking of divorce or getting a divorce, it happens quite often. So like with many other aspects of law, you may be practicing in one field, but you have to have some information, you have to have some knowledge about other fields because they do integrate, and divorce and bankruptcy often do go together. In terms of legal aspects, and then many times a divorce becomes the cause of someone filing a bankruptcy. You have a married couple who are now have two households. They've split up, and the income for one of them may not be the same, and they can't handle their debts, and they often wind up doing a bankruptcy because the divorce has put them in a bad financial situation. It's unfortunate, but it's a fact of life. I see it quite often.
All right. Our next question, someone's interested in their credit cards. This is a really good question, actually. I really like this one. She says, he or she said they are going to file for Chapter 7 and they have some credit cards with zero balances. You got open credit cards, no balances. Number one, do they need to list them on the bankruptcy petition? But number two, will the credit card companies close those accounts? And I can see why someone would be really concerned because their purchasing power is going to be severely limited if those accounts are closed.
Okay, so question number one, no, they are not listed in the petition. Why? They're not debts. Those credit cards with zero balances are simply, they have the right to use that card to charge in the future. And if there is no balance, there's no existing debt. If there is no existing debt at the time of filing, it need not be listed in the bankruptcy petition. The next question, will the credit card companies close the accounts? The answer is one of my favorite answers, maybe, right? Just what a lawyer will tell you, maybe. It depends upon the policy of the credit card company. It's not something you'll even know until after filing. I've seen situations where clients have a card with a zero balance, file a bankruptcy. They don't use that card. Maybe a year later, they go and charge on it, and boom, they're denied use of the card. The credit card company does have a right to close the account because of the bankruptcy, even though that card was not bankrupt. It doesn't happen a lot. It does happen. It'll happen more with a Visa or a MasterCard or a Discover than with a department store card. For this particular questioner, I would, after the bankruptcy is completed, contact the credit card companies with those zero balances and make sure those cards are still open so they don't get embarrassed going to a store and the car is denied.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially, too, as they're working on credit restoration, is that thing that we talk about a lot and mentioned that in our blog articles and also on the Facebook and Twitter pages and on your LinkedIn as well. It's a really big concern for people. And the good news is credit can be restored much easier than people think, as there have been more opportunities to learn about credit and better credit education and also some really good programs and folks who can use their systems to help challenge and wipe out some of the bad debt or inaccuracies there are on credit reports, which there are many. Our next question is about cross-collateral loans. Okay. Person says, I would like to keep my vehicle. Should I accept the bank's reaffirmation? I'm assuming they sent a reaffirmation as an option. It says, the bank sent this reaffirmation on note on the vehicle, but the loan is cross collateralized with a credit card debt to the bank. So I want to reaffirm my vehicle. Is there a way to do just that, where it's tied in with this other stuff?
Okay, this is often seen on debts with credit unions. And cross-collateral means the following. If you have a vehicle loan with a bank or a credit union, that vehicle is collateral securing the debt. If you don't pay the debt, the vehicle can be repossessed. If you file a bankruptcy and you have a vehicle loan and you want to keep the vehicle, you sign a reaffirmation agreement that states, even though I filed a bankruptcy, I want to continue to pay for my car, keep my car, and the bank or the credit union is very happy to do this reaffirmation. They would rather have your monthly payment with the interest that they gain as opposed to taking a used car back. Now, if you have a second account with the same bank or the same credit union where you have the vehicle loan, and let's say that second account is a credit card or a simple unsecured loan, cross-collateral means that the vehicle that was collateral for the vehicle loan is also collateral for the credit card, is also collateral for that so-called unsecured loan. The paperwork that you sign will state that in there. And you don't see that a lot with banks, but you do, and you see it almost all the time with credit union. So in this particular case, and in other cross collateral loans, the reaffirmation from the bank indicates that they want this particular debtor to sign an agreement repaying the credit card and the car. The debtor in this case can contact the bank and see if the bank will reaffirm just on the car and not the credit card. If so, that will make sense to do. If not, then the debtor has to make a choice, because there, you can't force the bank to reaffirm just on the car. Their position can be, you must reaffirm on the credit card and the car, or we're not going to do a reaffirmation, and we're going to ask you to return your vehicle. So the question becomes, how much is owed on the credit card? Adding that to the value of the car and what's owed on the car, does it make sense to do? It's a complicated situation. People often enter into cross-collateralized loans unknowingly by not reading everything carefully. And I hope this is, I've explained that clearly. Did it make sense what I just went through?
It did. It did, Joe. And the thing that I will agree with you is it's complex, because there are so many different variables and different financial situations that could be worked out with people. Co-signers, we've talked about that. As complex as people's lives are, so are their financial situations. And equally complex are the bankruptcy laws that we're all working with. Again, as we touched on, some of the procedures involved and the documentation that can be required to go through this whole process of getting a fresh start through bankruptcy can be a little overwhelming, particularly if someone has not gone through it, who's not familiar with the law. So Joseph Robel has over 40 years' experience representing clients in consumer bankruptcy, and that experience ensures that your financial situation, however complex, will be properly analyzed. Joseph Robel and his staff understand that you may be anxious about your financial problems, that you're tired of harassment by creditors, and you're uncertain as to whether filing bankruptcy is really what you need. Bankruptcy, if it will help your financial situation, you'll be properly advised for which chapter you will qualify. And at Joseph Robel Limited, the entire procedure from beginning to end will be clearly explained to you, as well as documents you will need to provide. They'll present you with a comprehensive what to do next letter at your initial free consultation that will guide you through the entire process from start until finish. If you don't need to file for bankruptcy and have a better solution, they'll tell you that. The firm's not there in business to put you in a bankruptcy simply to earn a fee. Joseph Robel Limited is a small law firm of attorneys and staff experienced in consumer bankruptcy. It is not a big bankruptcy law factory, and you're not going to get lost in their office. Rather, you'll be treated as a human being with the courtesy and dignity and respect you deserve. The mission at Joseph Robel Limited is to have you take control over your finances through the proper use of the bankruptcy laws. Located conveniently to almost everyone in the Chicagoland area, Joseph Robel Limited has offices in Chicago, in Deerfield, in Gurnee, Naperville, Orland Park, Schaumburg, Skokie, St. Charles, and Westchester. So they can represent Illinois clients in Cook and all the collar counties, Will, DuPage, Kane, LaSalle, Kendall, and Lake. Please also visit again the Chicago bankruptcy law firm of Joseph Robel Limited at chicagobankruptcy.com. All right, back to our program and our continued FAQs, frequently asked questions. As I mentioned in the break there, choosing which chapter to file is an interesting question, and a lot of people don't know all their options. But the question from this person is, what bankruptcy chapter is best for me to file? Currently, I do not have any assets. I don't own anything. My debt is over $30,000, from school loans to tickets and medical debt. My income last year was around $16,000. If I were to file, then what steps would I take? Also, I am not working right now, and that is making it even more difficult.
My general answer in almost every situation is that if someone qualifies for Chapter 7, it's always a better solution, better in a couple respects. The Chapter 7 is completed in 4 months. You file, you have a meeting with the trustee, you get your discharge. Not 8 months, not 2 months, basically 4 months. Chapter 13s can run up to 5 years. Chapter 13s are much more expensive, over double the attorney's fees. Filing a Chapter 13, some people think that by doing a 13 and paying back their creditors, they will be afforded a higher status credit-wise in the future than doing a Chapter 7, and that's not true. A bankruptcy is a bankruptcy is a bankruptcy on your credit report. If you can qualify for Chapter 7, then there's almost no reason we wouldn't do that. In this particular situation, it's a little hard to know the best solution. Income-wise, this particular possible debtor qualifies for Chapter 7. I don't know how much of the debt is student loans. Enough of the debt needs to be dischargeable for Chapter 7 to make sense. So, for example, if this person has $30,000 in total debt and $27,000 is student loans and $3,000 is medical bills, well, I think it would be crazy to file Chapter 7 to get rid of $3,000 and still continue to pay $27,000. So there's a point where there's enough dischargeable debt to make a Chapter 7 worthwhile doing, and that point's still going to be different from client to client. But back again to the basic answer, if you can do a Chapter 7, it is almost always the best solution. Cheapest and easiest.
Right. Okay. Well, it's there for people who need it, and if the person needs it, use it. Because the more money you have to pay off or save things in the future, that's how we get a fresh start. The next person has a question about garnishments. A person says, why would I file for bankruptcy if my income is exempt from garnishments? I live in the state of Oklahoma, and I make below the minimum amount to be garnished. I only owe for credit cards and medical bills. I don't own any property, and I will not get any inheritance.
Well, this person is correct in one respect. They are what we call judgment-proof, meaning if a creditor should file a lawsuit or more than one creditor files a lawsuit, they will obtain a judgment in the local court. That judgment is a finding that the money is due and owing. But now this creditor has a judgment that they can't collect upon if the income is below the amount necessary to garnish, then that judgment is rather worthless. Filing a bankruptcy now or in the near future, what would the value be? Number one, it'll stop harassment, avoid going to court. And assuming that this person is going to be earning more money in the future and can be garnished, will prevent them from having wages garnished in the future.
All right. This next question. So can you explain a little more with the minimum limit for garnishment, the exemption? What is that? I'm not familiar with that.
Well, you have to be bringing. You have to be earning a certain amount of money for a court judgment to turn into a garnishment. And it varies depending on state. There's federal and state guidelines. So it's going to vary from state to state. I have no idea what it is in Oklahoma where this particular client is. It's not that hard to look up. There's so much information on the Internet. In Illinois, if I remember off the top of my head, I think it's $299 or $300 per week. So if you're making below that minimum amount, lawsuits have no value against you. But again, that's the present time, and all of us want to keep earning more money. And assuming that you're not going to be earning this amount of money for the rest of your life, then doing a bankruptcy is going to protect you down the road when you are making that higher amount.
All right, good answer. Good. That clears it up. And again, I always learn something new. I stay true to my word. My next one question here is about presumption of abuse. So the question is, can I still file for bankruptcy if the presumption of abuse arises? People might say, well, what is that? Well, it says here, my last 6 months' income does not meet the means test. However, I've been unemployed for the last month and currently have no income. Do I have to wait until my 6 month income is below the means test presumption of abuse? Or can I file now and just explain in the other forms that I'm unemployed and have no current income?
Okay, so presumption of abuse has nothing to do with getting beat up by your spouse or the neighborhood bully
Or the creditor.
or the creditor. It's really a strange phrase that sort of comes out of the blue, and it arises from the changes in the bankruptcy law starting way back in October 2005, which is, it's going to be now 10 years, which is really hard to believe. And basically what it means is this. In order to qualify for a Chapter 7, among other things, you have to pass an income test. There's different names for it. I call it the median income means test. And the test basically says take the last 6 months of your gross income for yourself, if you're married with your wife, whether your wife is filing with you or not, as long as you're living together, other income that you may have for the household, add it up, multiply it by two, then take that total amount of income and match it up to the median income for your household size. So if you have a husband or wife and two children, you have a household of four, you look at the median income for the county and the state in which you live, and taking a look here in Illinois, for Lake County, the median income for a household of four is $80,776. And that number is going to vary from area to area around the country, and it's going to change every 6 months. It's based on IRS guidelines. So if your median income is below that number, you've passed the test. The test is over and done. When you fill out the bankruptcy petition, when your lawyer completes it, or if you are crazy enough to do a bankruptcy on your own without a lawyer, in the module, in the petition itself for the test, you check off the box that says there's no presumption of abuse, meaning you're not abusing the system by trying to file a Chapter 7, even though you shouldn't be. Okay, if you're above the median, and the median means that 50% of the population in the area in which you live makes over this dollar amount, 50% makes below. If you're above the median, there's a second part of the test called the means test. You're given credit for liability for federal and state taxes, Social Security taxes, Medicare taxes, secured debts, health insurance, term life insurance, child support, a variety of other matters. You plug those numbers in to the module, and many times, if you're not too far over the median, you'll wind up below it, and you've passed the test. You've done the second part of the test, and you're still not below the median. If you file a Chapter 7, the petition will show you there's a presumption of abuse, and you'll wind up with a motion to throw your case out by the local Chapter 7 trustee or the U.S. trustee. If you then file a Chapter 13, well, you'll need to file a Chapter 13 if there's a presumption of abuse because you'll have to pay back creditors. This is probably the most complicated and I would say crazy aspect of bankruptcy, because many parts of it is not logical. It took me quite a long time to learn how to do the analysis for clients for the median income test, and it throws a lot of people off when they try to do bankruptcies themselves. So going back to this particular question, for this client whose income was too high because they were working and now they have 1 month's worth of unemployment income, they need to wait enough months so that if they average the income, if they add up the income for the last six multiplied by two, they're below the median. Will they have to have 6 months' worth of no income? Probably not. How many they will need, I don't know, because I don't know what they were earning when they were working. So, Nick, you always use the word complex. This is about as complex as you can get.
Yes, there we go. And, again, so if someone, I always say, you know, even if you know someone next door to you who's gone through the whole process and they think they know everything about it, things change so frequently. It always changes. We have time for one more question. We're a little bit over time, but that's okay. So our last one is a good one about this concept of Chapter 13 plans with no payments. Person wants to know, what happens if they submit a Chapter 13 plan with no payments? It says that they filed a Chapter 13 to save their home from foreclosure. They have negative net disposable income, but expect income to increase so that payments can be made into a Chapter 13 plan. But currently, having a negative net disposable income, there was no dollar amount to include on monthly payments for the Chapter 13 plan. If they submit such a plan, will it automatically be dismissed with prejudice? Or will the Chapter 13 plan be evaluated at the creditors meeting where the trustee will determine and make a decision on it?
Okay, so this person filed their own Chapter 13, and it looks like it was a mistake to file because it sounds like they don't have money to pay into a plan. When you file a Chapter 13, you have to start paying the first payment 30 days after you file. And if your plan that you file says your payments are zero, the case is going to get thrown out. It won't be thrown out with prejudice. They'll be allowed to refile. But now they've wasted their filing fee that they paid to the clerk. They'll have to refile another case. They'll have to do a motion to extend the automatic stay. They need to put a budget together to show on their projected income what they can afford to pay. They need to file a plan that shows that they are paying money into the plan. What they really need to do is go to a lawyer. Doing this Chapter 13 on their own is going to be the worst headache that they can possibly imagine.
I don't want a headache like that, that's for sure. Well, that's about all the time we have. Joe, I want to thank you for answering these complex questions today.
Nick, thank you for hosting and coming up with a wonderful series of questions, as you always do.
There you go. And thank you to all of our listeners who share the programs and the links to these in their social networks, because many people find the shows and friends' Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn pages. So we thank you all for your support and sharing them. People don't always crawl out of the woodwork and advertise on Facebook, for example, that they're looking for bankruptcy information. So it's helpful to always pass it around, because you never know who might need to know something about bankruptcy and the whole interesting world of what it means to get a fresh start and improve your credit and all that other good financial advice and wisdom. The Chicago Bankruptcy Update Program, again, is programmed to give you the tips and tools you need to understand how bankruptcy law works and how the attorneys at Joseph Robel Limited can help you. We thank you all for your time and for sharing the show with others. For more information or talk to an attorney directly at the firm, you may dial 312-781-0996. And Joe, your email for the people? They want to email you?
My name, Joseph Wrobel, W-R-O-B-E-L, no punctuation in between, at chicagobankruptcy.com. Check our website, www.chicagobankruptcy.com. A lot of good information, some videos explaining basics, access to these radio programs. And, again, we're happy to answer questions for anyone thinking about doing this.
All right. Well, that's about all for today. Thank you all, and we'll be back next month. Bye-bye now.
Thank you, Nick.